All right. So the Gemara over here in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in the Aleph of Beis in Avodah Zarah, talks about it just finished talking about all the different holidays. There's a very interesting halakha. Actually, we're coming up to that season now in America. There's a very interesting halakha. What? No, there's an amazing halakha that most people don't know about. Actually, most of the halakha that Misachas Avodah Zarah talks about, most people don't know. There are all the halakha about how we're supposed to deal with non-Jews. And there's a halakha that a person is not allowed to do business with a non-Jew 3 days before and 3 days after his holidays.
Whose holidays?
The non-Jew's holidays.
So you can't do business before Christmas, 3 days after.
Does Thanksgiving count?
No. It has to be a holiday that's associated with the Avodah Zarah.
Or if you get to Black Friday.
So...
the problem is the day after.
And so... again, you want to know how it applies to nowadays with conglomerate companies and things like that? That's a whole different question, but it's a halacha. And so the Gemara just finished off listing off all the different holidays that the non-Jewish pagans had. Another Gemara says something very interesting. Amar Shmuel. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. Oid Acheres Yesh Lahem. There's one more holiday that the non-Jews have. Biroimi. That's celebrated in Rome. Achas l'shivim shana, once every 70 years. Mevi'in adam shalim markivin oisal adam chigir. They take a healthy individual and they ride him on the shoulders of a lame person. U'malbish noisei big day adam arishin. And they put on himself, on the guy who's on top, the clothing of adam arishin. Umanichem loy beroysher karfifo shrabi shmoil. And they place upon the bottom person the face of Rabbi Shmuel. We'll explain what that means in a second. Vitalule bitzavare mitkal zuza de pisa. And they place on his neck a zuz worth of paz. Paz is a very, very precious gem. Umachapin es hashvokim ba'avich umachriz mafonov. Right, they take him through the marketplace and they cry out in front of him, Sach kirei plaster. The accounting of the master is false. Achvod marona zayfonov. The brother of our master is a liar. He's a trickster. Dechame chame, whoever sees this right now, he sees it. Udloi chame, loi chame, but whoever hasn't seen it will never see it. Marahani l'ramor b'ramusa ulizayfona b'zayfanuse. What benefit has a trickster gotten from his trickery? And a shiesty individual from being shiesty. Umesayim in bahochri, and they end off the parade by saying this. Vayledein kadyokum dein. Woe to this one when this one gets up. The Roman parade. Once every 70 years. What's going on? What do you think this is talking about, guys?
He was definitely predicated on Ace of San Diego.
Oh, so what does it mean? Why once every 70 years? Why once every 70 years? Oh. So once every 70 years, because every 70 years that goes by, right, we know that the first place of Midrash was returned to us after 70 years. We've been in Gaulis for now over 2,000 years. Once every 70 years, it's like as if there's a judgment. Why haven't we gotten the Beis HaMikdash back? First Beis HaMikdash took only 70 years for us to get back. Now, every 70 years. So once every 70 years, the Romans who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash make a parade. Because it's a testimony to their might. And what do? They take an Adam Shalem, they take a healthy individual, and they place him on the shoulders of somebody who's lame. Who's a gimp. Why? The Adam Shalem represented Esav. The lame person represented Yaakov. Because Yaakov, after he fought with the angel, right, became lame. Right, the angel hit him in his gidanasha. And they put on him the begadim of Adam Rishon. What are the begadim of Adam Rishon?
Nothing.
Oh. So when Rivka told Esav, sorry, told Yaakov, excuse me, to go steal the brachos from Esav. So she took out Esav's clothing and put them on him. What was that clothing?
It was the clothing he stole from Nimrod.
What was the clothing that he stole from Nimrod? Right, Nimrod, Esav, when he ran into Yaakov after coming in from the field, and he was starving, dying. So the Medrash explains that where was he coming from? If he was out hunting, and he saw Nimrod with his armies, and he killed Nimrod, and he stole from Nimrod the begadim of Adam Rishon. Nimrod had passed down from him. He had the begadim of Adam Rishon. What was the begadim of Adam Rishon? The begadim of Adam Rishon basically gave a person the capabilities to control and talk to animals.
Cool.
That's why Esav was such a good hunter. So Esav stole him from Nimrod, and he was running in from his life, right? The soldiers of Nimrod were chasing Esav down to try to kill him. And that's why Esav comes bursting into Yaakov Avinu's kitchen, saying, I'm going to die! Give me something to eat. He really worried he was going to die. So Yaakov had taken those begadim of Adam Rishon from Esav. The begadim gave basically Esav control over all living creatures in the world. So they put on him the begadim of Adam Rishon, and they put on him in the face of Rabbi Shmuel. What was the face of Rabbi Shmuel? Who was Rabbi Shmuel?
He's one of the
One of the Asari Rugen Malchus. It says that Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was one of the most beautiful men in the world. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, it says that his face looked like the face of Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov Avinu's face looked like the face of Mother Marisha. That's why the angels, when they were going up and down on the ladder, the Medrash says that they were going up, they saw the face of Yaakov Avinu on the Kisya covered, right? We know that there are four faces on the Kisya covered. You guys have heard this before? You got a Chagiga. There are four faces on the Kisya covered. There's the face of a lion, the face of a Nesher, the face of a Shor, but that got switched to the face of a Kruv, which is a baby, an angel. And then there's the face of a human being.
It got switched.
Because it got switched, because they didn't, after the Egel Azov, they didn't want there to be a reminder of the Egel Azov by the Kisya Kavod.
Temporarily under construction.
Yeah.
This piece has been moved.
And that, by the way, that's why in the Parsha it says that Yaakov Avinu wakes up from his dream and he says, Ochein! Right? I did not know this was, right? This was a holy place. V'ani lo yadati, and I didn't know. Achen, what does the word Achen stand for? Achen is Aleph Chaf Nun, Aryeh Kruv and Nesher. That I knew that there was up on the Kisya cover. V'ani lo yadati. But I did not know that my face was there.
Yeah, but I was the Kruv that was supposed to be before.
Because up there's no time. It all happens at the same time.
Fine.
Right? So Malachim are going up looking at the face of the human being. What it looks like, it's supposed to look like at perfection. That's why there's a human being's face on the Kisya covered. Coming down, seeing Yaakov Avinu's face and saying, look, it looks the same.
Who shared the same face?
What?
Who had the same face?
Adam Rishon. It would be Shmuel ben Elisha. Shmuel ben Elisha was the Kohen Gadol that went, right, which is one of the hardest Gemaras to even understand. But it, for some reason, they decided to make it into a song. Right, Shmuel ben Elisha, one time when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there. And he asked Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha to give him a bracha. What that means, don't ask me.
Right.
And when Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was one of the Asari Hirugi Malchus, and when he was taken out to be killed, the daughter of the Caesar looked out and saw him and saw such a beautiful man. She went to her father, and her father said, you can ask me for anything, just don't ask me to save Rabbi Shmuel's life. I have to kill him. So she said, at least save me his face. So it says that they peeled off his face. And when they got to the Makom, the place of his tefillin, he let out such a cry that the entire Eretz Yisrael shook. And they preserved that faith. And she kept it as a mask. So they place this mask that was made from the face of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, which looked like Yaakov Avinu, and they place it on this lame individual. And they parade this person around all the streets in Rome, saying that the account is false. The brother of our master, right, who's the master, who's the father of Rome? Esav. He's a liar. What did he win from all his lies? We all grow up learning about Yaakov and Esav sort of in a very childish way. We always learned that Esav was the bad kid. From birth, he wanted to bust out. He wanted to go to the house of Avodah Zarah's. And Yaakov, he was the quintessential, right? Good kid. Always in the Beis Medrash. Never going to places he shouldn't be going. Right? And it's always destined that Yaakov Avinu is going to be a tzaddik and Esav is going to be a rasha. But if we look at the parashas very carefully, that's not what was supposed to happen. Esav was supposed to be one of the others. It's not just a coincidence that we have four imos and three avos, right? It sounds a little bit off balanced. But really, there were supposed to be four avos and four imos. Esav was supposed to have six shvatim, and Yaakov was supposed to have six shvatim. They were supposed to fill two different roles. You might ask, well, then why does Esav have all these different desires and all these different, you know, evil inclinations inside of him? Because they were supposed to fulfill two different roles. In Klal Yisrael, we know that there are two different roles that we have. Just like in Gan Eden, when the world was created, there were two different trees. There was what's called the Eitz HaChaim, and there's the Eitz HaDas. The Eitz HaChaim is pure life. The Eitz HaDas is Tov V'ra. The difference between good and evil. They represent two different tafkidim that a person can have. What are those tafkidim? You have the tafkid of Sur Meira, stay away from evil, and you have the tafkid of Asei Tov. Yaakov was the Asei Tov. Esav was supposed to be the Sur Meira. Esav had to have all those desires to do evil so that he could conquer over them. And that's why Esav's head is buried in the Ma'aris Machpelah. Esav's head is buried in the Ma'aris Machpelah because Esav, for all intents and purposes, should have been one of the others. In potential, he was there. He just didn't live up to that potential. So the head belongs in the Ma'aris Machpelah. And so the Arizal says that when it says that Yitzchak loved Esav, ki tayed b'piv, he fooled him with his mouth. The Arizal explains that Esav HaRosha took all the Kedusha that was inside of him and left it in his mouth. So every time he opened up his mouth to talk to Yitzchak Avinu, all Yitzchak saw was that permeating, glowing Kedusha. And he thought that had gone throughout all of Esav's body, but Esav just left it right there. So in head, Esav belonged in the Ma'aris Machpelah.
So ideally, he was supposed to marry Leah?
Yes. That's why Leah, when she understood what was going on, so she cried. She cried because she thought that she was supposed to marry Esav. That's why Yaakov, in the end, had to marry both sisters, because what happened?
Esav botched it.
Exactly. It says, when Esav came in running from that field, he did all three big averes that day. He did Gilirai, Shvichas Damman, and Avodah Zarah. And he came in to Yaakov Avinu, and he said, I'm going to die. And all the Midrash, right, the Midrash explains, and what was it? Is that V'lamalia b'chora, why do I need the b'chora? Why? Because Asa said, what do I need to serve in the Beis HaMikdash for? Why do you think Asa was going to be the one that was going to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? Because Yaakov doesn't need the physical world. Yaakov was supposed to be only learning Torah, doing good all day long. The Beis HaMikdash is where you use the physical world to connect to the spiritual world. Beis HaMikdash is where heaven met earth. That was Asa's job. Asa's job was supposed to be that he was supposed to be the one that dealt with the physical world. I took the Kedusha out of that. Therefore, he said, what do you mean? If I deal in the Beis HaMikdash and I do the wrong things, I'm going to die. Why should I bother? So what did Yaakov say? Fine. You're not going to fulfill your tafkid. Let me buy you out. Let me buy you out. I'll multitask. I'll do both. So when Yaakov bought the Bechora, he wasn't just trying to, let's say, push Esav out of the picture. He recognized that there was a certain topic that needed to be filled in Christ that Esav wasn't filling. So Yaakov said, let me take it over. That's why if you notice, very interestingly enough and very carefully, the brachas that Yitzchak gives Yaakov in the end, who he's supposed to give to Esav, there's nothing spiritual about them. It's all physical things. You know, live off the fat of the land and all these different things that are not spiritual brachas. Why? Because it wasn't the fact that Yitzchak didn't think that Yaakov needed brachas. But those specific brachas which you were going to give to Esav didn't apply to Yaakov. Esav was supposed to be the one that dealt with the physical world and so that he could support Yaakov who was going to be sitting in the tent learning all day. Yaakov didn't need them. They didn't apply to him.
I have a question.
Yes.
So when Esau sells the Bechor to Yaakov, I heard an opinion that said that the reason for that is because he was focused on this world. He didn't really care about posterity. So he didn't really need the Bechor that would affect his children. But the Bechor that Yaakov gives Yaakov, that was supposed to go to Esau, don't say anything about you and your children. They just say your brother will serve you, so on and so forth.
Hmm? What did you say? They say you're gonna live off the fat of the land, right? Have all these physical, wonderful things.
Right. So is that referring to is to your children also?
Yeah, to everything. But the whole point is that Asa didn't realize that those are the brachas that he was going to get. what bothered Asa is that he comes to the base and makes
so
if he comes to the base.
So why did he get so upset to get this? Because Yitzchak gave Yaakov brachos for not only just for the present, but also for his descendants.
We'll see in a second why Esav got so upset. We'll talk about that too. Okay? Because that's the end of the Gemara over here.
How can one serving the Beis HaMikdash not learn our...
What? I'm saying serving the Beis HaMikdash is dealing in the physical world, meaning you have two roles in Klal Yisrael, Yisachar and Zvulun, right? It works Zvulun goes out to work and Yisachar learns. It doesn't mean that you don't keep halacha, but it means that my tafkid is not to be learning. My tafkid is to be working, but I'm machshir Torah to the point where I realize it has to be done. It's not for me. So therefore, I'm supporting him, but it's a 50-50 agreement, right? You make $1 million, you give him $500,000. You can also do it to, different percentages, but you don't get as much schar. And that's the way it was supposed to be with Esav and Yaakov, also. And so therefore, Esav said that it's not worth it for me. So Yaakov bought him out. By the way, that's why immediately after Yaakov takes the brachas and finally writes Esav out of the picture of the future of Klal Yisrael, what's the first thing that Yaakov has to do? He has to go into Gullus. He has to go into the house of Laban. Why? Because what's Gullus all about? If you look at there's a very interesting phenomena that happens in Klal Yisrael, that we're never in the same place twice. We bounce around from place to place, from Gullus to Gullus, right? You find a huge Jewish community in Germany, there's no huge Jewish community in Germany. Eastern Europe, not anymore. Everywhere that Klal Yisrael was, Spain, almost nobody. Every place that Klal Yisrael was the epicenter of Judaism is not really anything Yamash anymore. Why? Because Klal Yisrael moves from place to place in Gullus. You go there, you suck out the Kedusha, and you leave. That's Esav's job. that was supposed to be Esav's job. Go into the Ra, take the good out of it, and leave. That's why Yaakov had to go into Golis. Just an interesting story. They bring down a famous Maisel with Ruchaim Balazhin. You guys know who Ruchaim Balazhin was?
Heard of
him. What? Heard of him. Ruchaim Balazhin was the number one Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. You guys heard of the Vilna Gaon, right? Mm-hmm. And it says that Ruchaim Balazhin was once in the yeshiva Balazhin, and he was sitting in the front of the Beit Medrash, and all of a sudden he burst out crying. Uncontrollably. The Talmidim came to surround him, and they tried to comfort him, but he wouldn't be comforted. Finally, he calmed down. They asked him, Rebbe, why were you crying? And Chaim Volozhin said, I saw Ruach HaKodesh, at the last way station that Klal Yisrael is going to have to go through before Mashiach comes is America. So they asked him, so why are you crying, Rebbe? So he said, because I saw the destruction that's going to need to happen to get Klal Yisrael to go there. The only reason why America became an epicenter of Klal Yisrael's history is after the Holocaust. Klal Yisrael moves from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I'm not a prophet. That I can't tell you. I haven't been blessed with the Ruach Kodesh or Gili Eliyahu.
What's the difference? What is the second one?
Gili Eliyahu, when Eliyahu comes to tell you things. I have neither. And so therefore, Yaakov had to go right into Golos. Because he just usurped a new purpose in life. Now he had to multitask. What was he supposed to take out of the house of Laban? A very interesting Zohar. The Zohar says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulled out the neshamas of Rachel and Leah, and he's going to place them into the world, the Yetzer Hara came and handed in his resume. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you... I'm going to put neshamas like that into the world. I got no chance. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry. I'm putting them into the house of a loved one. So Yitzhak says, okay, fine. I have a chance now.
Not really.
What?
It didn't quite work out so well for him.
Okay.
Intermediate.
So, the whole competition, let's say, between Yaakov and Esav was a whole different playing field. Now, why did Esav hate Yaakov so much? He wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. By the way, also, that's why the Malach of Esav, who's the Malach of Esav? You guys know? It says in Parshas, right, by Yishlach, Yaakov fights with an angel, right? Who's the angel? The Malach of Esav. Who's the Malach of Esav?
Yitzhar.
What do you think the Malach of Esav is the Yitzhar?
He's supposed to be embroiled in physicality. That
Esav represents us at failure. Esav could have had all the potential in the world.
So you're 12.
He could have been one of the others. He was supposed to have six of them. So therefore, what's the Yitzhar here for? The Yitzhar is here to make us fail, to make us not reach our potential. Therefore, the Malach of Esav is the Yitzhar. That's why Esav is also represented by a pig. You guys ever heard this before? You ever wonder why when you associate to a non-kosher animal, you associate a pig? Why a pig? A pig is at least halfway there. Right?
Because
it's cut. So what? Why do you associate pig?
On the outside, it's showing that it's righteous on the outside.
Not only that, you know what are the pig called in Hebrew?
Nothing.
Chazir, you know why? She's Seifa Lachsa. It's going to become kosher in the times of Mashiach.
Cool.
Why? Because if you look at Parshas Shmini, what it mentions about a pig,
the Hashem pig,
it says that a pig has split hooves, but won't chew its cud. Doesn't say it can't chew its cud. Doesn't say. Just says it won't. A pig, again, I haven't dissected a pig actually, but a pig has what anatomically can make it to its cud. It just doesn't. And in the times of Mashiach, it's going to start chewing its cud when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealed. That's exactly what Asaph is. Asaph has all the potential in the world. He just doesn't live up to it. So what does he do? He shows you how kosher he is. And there's nothing more trace than that. He's kosher on the outside and trace on the inside. Pig is the only animal that has split hooves and doesn't chew its cud. All other animals that have only one of the simanitara all have it the opposite way. They chew its cud, but they don't have split hooves. Asaph is the only one that's different. The pig is the only one that's different. Because he has all the potential to be kosher. He just doesn't want it. And that's why his malach is the malach, right? The malach is what's the ruling, right? Every nation in the world has a malach that rules over it. What rules over Esav? The Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Hara is here to cause us to fail. So what do we claim? Now Esav gets bought out. Yaakov takes the brachas. And with it he takes the begadim of Adam Rishon also, control over this world. And what do we say? Why is Esav so upset? Why does Esav hate Yaakov so much? Because he took his brachas. Esav didn't want it. You ever wonder that? Esav didn't want it. He did it willingly. But Yivaz Esav et ha-Bachora. Esav was disgusted by the Bechorah. Why does he hate him so much?
At that point, he realized that not only, because at that point, Yitzchak came to the conclusion that because when Esav came into the room, the Rashi brings down a Medrash that says that like it was just like Gehenna opened up in front of him.
Okay, but that was Esav who he was. But the question is, why did Esav hate Yaakov? Esav didn't want to be part of Kol Yisrael. What causes Esav to hate Yaakov so much?
He took the begotten, he no longer make all the... No longer the hunter, and he
much... I mean, what happened? Right? Is that Esav and Yaakov were fighting over... If you look in the Rashi, right, it says that the kids in Rivka's belly were fighting over Nachlas Shnei Olamos. Right? The inheritance of two worlds. So first of all, Yaakov was fighting over this world also. Wasn't that Yaakov just got the next one? Yaakov was fighting over this world too. The fight between Yaakov and Esav is not just a fight for, you know, they have this world, we have the next. It's a fight for both. That's why Yaakov took the begadim of the Rishon. So wasn't it just that Yaakov merited the next world? But Yaakov took this world also. And that's exactly what the Romans were saying when they said, look, it's all false. What did a trickster win by doing all his tricking? What do you think? You think you bought Esav out? You think you got this world? You think you got the next? Look at us! It's been 70 years again, and you have nothing. And we're continuously suppressing you. What did you win by tricking? They ride Esav on top of Yaakov. The shalem person on top of the limp person. And they make him look like Yaakov with the begotten of Adam Rishon and Rishmol's face. And they say, look, who's on top? But then they end off with a very interesting statement. How do they end off? Vayla Dain Kad Yakum Dain. Woe to this one when this one gets up. The Medrash says that it's a halacha he that Esav is Seinei as Yaakov. It's a halacha. It doesn't say that like it's a fact. It's a halacha. It's ingrained. And if you think about it, like I asked before, why is it so inherent in Esav that he hates us so much? And not only that, you know, I don't know how many of you guys, or if any of you guys are planning on going to Poland this year, or how many of you guys have ever been to Poland. But when I went to Poland to tour the concentration camps, so, first of all, there's nothing like it, seeing it firsthand. You can watch all the Holocaust movies you want. It's not the same. And you think that when you look at Nazis, you think about what they've done. And again, just realize the Nazis are just one nation of people that, amongst many who continuously throughout the history of Klal Yisrael have oppressed us and tortured us. And you think that if you saw, you see a picture of a Nazi, you'd see something demonic about his face, something that lies behind his eyes, that screams out that he's a monster. How can he light people on fire, throw babies to dogs? I remember being in a concentration camp, and they have a wall with all the different, you know, pictures of the commandants, officers who were in charge of the concentration camp. And I remember looking at it. I remember looking at it and being so, I guess, astounded that they look like normal people. They were all doctors and lawyers and had families. And they looked like normal people. And it bothered me. How could a normal person do that? How could a normal person, you know, torture and maim people during the day and come home to his wife and kids at night? How could he do that? How can you live with yourself? The answer, okay, Esav's saying it's Yaakov, but how does that answer it? What makes him hate us so much? So I remember over my week in Poland, I thought about it a lot. And I came to an answer. I think it's echoed in this Gemara. Esav can make a lot of noise in the world. And he can seemingly control the world. But Esav realizes that in the end of the day, whatever he does is temporary. Whatever success he has, whatever tall buildings he builds, countries he conquests, at the end of the day, it's very temporary. Because after he dies, there's nothing left. And he realizes that no matter how much he does in this world, he's got a limited amount of time for success. However, Yaakov bought into eternity. Yaakov bought into eternal, and everything that Yaakov does is eternal. And that burns Esav up inside. That's why the Chumash says that Esav, when he hears that Yaakov took the brachas for him, and he's totally written out of the picture, I believe that the Torah uses five adjectives. Yitzhak, Esav, Tzachar, Gedolah, right? Five adjectives, right? Torah doesn't waste words. He uses five adjectives to describe Esav's cry and his scream after he recognizes what he just gave up. He gave up eternity. And it's not only the Jews that recognize it. Mark Twain wrote an essay on the Jew. You guys ever read it? Some of you? Some of you guys never read it? Didn't read it? Never read it? I'll read it to you. I have a copy of it. Mark Twain was not Jewish.
Mind it? What is that?
This?
Mm-hmm.
A notebook of mine.
There you go. A nice script.
And he wrote it like this. He says, the statistics are right. The Jews constitute but 1% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous, dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of. But he is heard of. Has always been heard of. He's as prominent on the planet as any other people. And his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and abstruse learning are always out of proportion to the weakness of his numbers. He has made a marvelous fight in the world in all the ages and had done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in the twilight now, or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakness of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All of the forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? Even non-Jews recognize it. But we know what the secret of our mortality, or of our immortality is. That Kosh Baruch Hu gave a havtacha to Yaakov Avinu that no matter what, Klal Yisrael will survive. We're eternal. And Esav knows it. And it burns Esav up inside. And that's why no matter what, Esav will try time and time again to try to prove that we're not immortal. Someone once, a secular Jew once said to me, he goes, no, it's not only a Jewish phenomenon that people persecute. You look around, right? In Serbia, right? The Muslim, you know, the ethnic Albanians were you know, racially cleansed. You know, all over the world, people are racially cleansed. I said, you're right. Some people hate some people, and other people hate other people, but everybody hates the Jew.
We made a song about it. National Brotherhood Week.
Okay, I don't know.
LA.
Right? Everybody hates the Jew. Why? Because Esav's out there to prove us wrong. To prove that he could stamp us out. But he can't. No matter how hard he tries, he won't. And so no matter how much the Roman parade trumps it up, look! Who's on top? How much did you win by all your trickery? How much did you gain? You think you gained control of this world? Look at us. It's been 70 years. The base of Mikdash is still in the ashes are still burning. You have nothing. But even at the end, they say, whoever saw this parade sees this parade because it's once every 70 years. The next time it's around, you're probably not going to be around to see it. And woe to us. Woe to Esav when Yaakov gets up. Because if Klal Yisrael is down, it's only temporarily. Because in the end of the days, we have a havtacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're going to get up. And Esav knows it. And even if he continuously fights and continuously tries to prove that we don't have a right to exist, that he can extinguish us, he never will be able to. And that's the eternal struggle between Yaakov and Esav. That Esav will always try to put us down. Esav will always try to fight us. No, Esav will always try to extinguish us. However, if you attach yourself to Klal Yisrael, you have an everlasting havtacha that you will survive.